Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale.
They speak to fishermen, hunters, you know, the ranch and rodeo crowd. They're big into barbecue, outdoor. So you have rock climbers and, you know, river raft guides and all kinds of people, snowboarders, skiers. And I think the biggest difference for us is Coast is pretty much just a fishing company. So our one community that we really, really focus on and drive home is the fishermen and anglers, yeah.
That was Evan Russell describing a subtle difference between two iconic brands in fishing. Yeti, Costa, and the people behind the brands today on the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today.
Hey, how's it going today? Thanks for stopping by the Fly Fishing Show. If you are brand new to the podcast, take a second here, stop and click that subscribe button in the app of choice you're using. If that is Apple Podcasts, it's actually a follow now. Click that little plus sign in the upper right corner of your app, and that'll get you notified next time our new episode goes live. Evan Russell is here to help us understand what goes into sunglasses and how you can select your next pair of glasses. Evan talks about the most popular lenses for fishing, whether glass or plastic is better, and some of the features there, and some of the other important factors that may help you understand glasses just a little bit better. Before we get started, let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. In today's world of mass-produced products, Stonefly Nets has reclaimed the tradition of handcrafted care with their custom wood landing nets. Please head over to wetflyswing.com/stonefly to get your custom net today. Let's jump into it and see how this one turns out. Without further ado, here is Evan Russell from Costa. How's it going, Evan?
Good, Dave. Yeah, it's nice, man. We're here in Austin, Texas, and it's a nice, like, I think it's like 53, so enjoying the fall weather. Yeah.
There you go. Oh, so 53, that's right. 53 is cool for you guys.
Yeah, for sure. So it's, it's a nice change of pace.
Yeah, we've had a number of... we've had a lot of Texas. The more we do this, the more Texas is kind of a hot spot for us. And, you know, we've had a number of guests down there. And so we're going to dig in, probably not as much on the fly fishing, although we'll probably touch on that today. But we're going to dig into Costa, Costa, what you have going. But talk about how you first, just quickly, how you first got into fly fishing and then how you brought that into working for Costa.
Sure, yeah. So I grew up in Florida. A lot of inshore, offshore saltwater fishing there, and went to... University of Central Florida, and about an hour from there is a Mosquito Lagoon, which is, you know, used to be an incredible red fishery, and unfortunately the a lot of the seagrass is gone, and it doesn't hold as many fish as it used to. But when I was in college, I would go over there a couple of days a week. I was part of the UCF fishing club, and we had we basically got a grant from the college. Each club got a little bit of money. We had some funds raised, and we had a bunch of fishing kayaks. So we were able to rent those and go over there. I went over there with my buddy Matt Norman a couple of days a week and had a blast. And, you know, on days we didn't have class. And so kind of got into fly fishing that way, I guess, probably, I don't know, 10 or 12 years ago. I grew up in Fort Pierce, Florida, and there wasn't a ton of fly fishing there. A little bit of tarpon off the beach, but kind of, you know, I kind of did what my dad and my parents did, and we did a lot of sail fishing and bottom fishing and, you know, snook and red fishing, shore, you know, conventional tackle. But yeah, so kind of fell into that, and It was funny. My friend Matt that I mentioned earlier, we when we would be driving over, he was working part time at West Marine at the time, and we were both kind of joking about like how do we turn this passion of ours into a career? And we both got super lucky. He works for a youth, you know, he went to work for Hell's Bay Boat Works after college, and I wound up working for a boat company as well, and then got into kind of the publishing scene. So I worked for Bonnier Corporation, so Saltwater Sportsman, Sport Fishing, Marlin. At the time when I first started, they had Fly Fishing and Saltwater's magazine as well, and kind of worked there for a while, and landed at Yeti for the last 5 years, and then recently been with Coaster right out a year now. So and yeah, so we're brought us out to Austin, Texas, and we're actually planning on moving back to Florida here this winter. So and being with COSA kind of gives us a great opportunity to do that, being a Florida-based company. And yeah, so it's been, I feel super fortunate to have kind of landed in the industry at some really great companies and kind of get a PhD in marketing, you know. So it's kind of, you know.
Right. That's I think as we have time, we might dig into a little bit of the marketing stuff at the end, just because there's a lot of brands that listen to this as well. But I'm curious, so which species when you're down there in the lagoon, which were you chasing mainly back in the day?
Yeah, so mainly redfish. A ton of redfish and some big trout, you know, flounder now and then, and then some, and there's some like back creeks and little ponds and stuff that had some baby tarpon in them there too. So,
gotcha. No, it's cool. I recently we had Steve Davis from the Everglades Foundation on. He did.
Oh, awesome! Yeah, cool.
Yeah, he did a deep dive into all the stuff they have going, which is amazing. You know, it's like a huge project, like $16 billion. I think he said it's the largest restoration project in history of the world. Right?
It is. Yep.
Giant thing. Yeah. And so I love it. So I'll put a link to the show notes to that so people can take a look. And then, yeah, just, you know, it's interesting hearing about the story for me, because these brand stories, we talked to a lot of people that are on all ends of it. And I know the Yeti story is pretty cool. But yeah, I'd love to hear this, the Costa. Maybe you could just start us off before we dig into sunglasses and talk about, you know what I mean? Like what, tell us, give us the little Costa, how did this company, because it became, now it's like a leader, but was it always leading like it is?
Yeah. So, you know, I think a lot of these companies that, you know, kind of take an existing product and elevate them are kind of born out of frustration, like of something that doesn't exist currently. Right. Or something that's not quite cutting it. So, COSA was founded in 1983 by a gentleman named Ray Ferguson. And, he was an avid fisherman, and him and his buddies just were kind of looking for something to help. And they, you know, polarization technology was just starting to come out, and figured, how do we translate this into sunglasses and make a, you know, make a killer product. So they've, you know, been around for quite a while. Next year, I guess 2023 will be our 40th anniversary.
Oh, wow. God, it's amazing.
Yeah. Which is crazy. Yeah. And so in the early 2000s, COSA became kind of what it is today, and what it's known for is the 580 glass lens. So that's when they came out with the 580 technology, which cuts light at certain nanometers. That's kind of what the bread and butter and why COSA is what it is today is because of that. And it, you know, just the clarity and the quality of them. So that technology has been around, I think, 18 to 20 years now. And so, you know, it's kind of funny because with the product team, we were trying to kind of top that, and we had some prototype lenses. Actually, I wasn't working for a company at the time, but I had a buddy named Todd who we were tarpon fishing in Apalachicola, and he brought some testers, and we're like, man, these aren't quite as good. So trying to kind of top that, and haven't been able to yet. So yeah, which is crazy. So
no kidding. Give us, for somebody who doesn't know anything about the tech, what is 580 and why was that so important at the time?
So it basically filters light out at the 580 nanometers. So it helps with, it basically cuts the, it like cuts out, we're not technically allowed to say cuts out bad light, but light that doesn't enhance your like optical clarity. And it depends, right? And so you have the light spectrum, and this And basically, I'm trying to think. I would love to include a chart for you guys.
Well, that's the thing. This might be easier because first I got a couple of questions. Maybe think about if there's a place that we could send somebody right now just to understand more.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that would be one thing.
So we have that. Yeah, we have a link on our site for that. And it kind of explains that. And it has the graph chart of all the like the color spectrum. And it kind of shows you where it starts to cut it out.
Okay. And who would be a person, like, do you know somebody who's like the nerdiest glass person, you know, around that knows all this techie stuff? Do you guys have like kind of like scientists and stuff like that on your, on the staff?
Yeah. So we have, yeah, we, a lot of our product team is, super well versed in all this. And even Jess Bryant from our, product team knows it very well.
Okay.
But yeah, John Sanchez, Casey Lopez on our team, product guys, they're,
gotcha.
I mean, they can really, really dig in. You could probably do a whole podcast on that.
Yeah, that would be, yeah, I think today what we'll
technology,
do,
you know?
Exactly. So. Yeah. I think today what we'll do is dig into more of like maybe understanding, choosing glasses, some basic stuff, and then we'll leave that for maybe another one if we could dig into it.
Yeah.
I was absolutely. Also curious, who is, just walk us through. So we're talking a 40-year-old company, who now is running the show there and what's that look like?
Yeah. So, trying to think from a as far as who's running the show from your perspective, like what what do you,
like, I'm not sure if you guys have, I'm just kind of not too smart on all this stuff. I mean, do you have one like CEO who's running things? Is that kind of the or like,
yeah, so actually, so yeah, in 2019 we kind of merged into Luxottica, which is a big sunglass brand eyewear, you know, kind of.
Oh, wow. How do you spell that?
Yeah. So it's Luxottica.
Okay.
And, and so they're the parent company of Ray-Ban, Oakley.
Oh, wow.
Persol. Yeah. All those. And so we're, so we have our corporate, we have corporate headquarters in New York, but our like main organization is in Milan, Italy. And we're, so we're still based in Florida. And then we have, you know, employees, the Costa employees are kind of all over the country. We have, I'm in Austin. We have employees in Florida. You know, a lot of our team is spread out. We have, Justice in Bozeman. Some of our guys are in California. One of our guys is in Charleston. So we're kind of all over the place. But yeah, so we have, you know, we have the CEO of Luxottica, and then that trickles down to, we have the president of North America. And then we have the, senior VP of North America who, his name is Justin Cubs, and he kind of oversees Oakley and Costa business for North America. So,
yeah. Yeah. So this is a huge, yeah, this is, I mean, I'm not sure how many people are involved in the company, but this is a probably, I mean, I'm not sure if it's the biggest, but one of the big, and Luxottica is definitely mm-hmm. massive, owning, Ray-Ban and some other ones.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of, you know, it's been an interesting transition in the fact that, you know, it kind of happened. Transitions are always, or integrations, if you will, are kind of always bumpy. And then you throw COVID in the mix.
Oh, right.
And so it's tough, you know, and people aren't in person. So everybody's trying to do everything remote. Yeah. But it's been good. And our product's gotten better. Our technology's gotten a little bit better, too, because we can pull from some of our sister brands. And, you know, our like Oakley's R&D facility is incredible. And we get to use a lot of their like 3D printers and some of their kind of things that they have in their back pocket. So it's been a cool transition. And then a lot of our products are made in America now. I mean, most of them are, you know, they're, you know, made in California, which is pretty cool. So
there you go. So there's some good, probably some good and some bad.
Yeah, definitely some good things coming out of that. Yeah. And I wouldn't even say bad, just kind of unknowns at the time. And then over the last 2 years, you know, I once you figure out internally who you need to speak with and kind of, you know, just the processes and procedures, it's, I mean, I think we're full steam ahead now and in a really good spot. So.
Okay, perfect. Well, let's dig in. I'm going to save some of the marketing, you know, questions if we have time for the end, but let's dig into just some basics on glasses. Cause
sure.
You know, I think that's where I initially connected, to Hannah, and we were talking and, you know, I was in the market for some new glasses. I've had, you know, been wearing some old ones and things like that. But so it was interesting going through that process, right? Looking for a new pair of glasses. I know you do have information on your website, but where do you start somebody when they say they come in and they say, okay, I want to get a new pair of glasses? Is it just, do you start with lenses or do you start with frames? What do you start with?
Yeah. So I would say the first thing would be, I would start with frames, because you want people to have a good experience and have comfort out on the water. And especially when if you're fishing, you know, 8, 10, 12 hour days, you want them to be bearable for that long and be comfortable and them to have a good experience. So I would start with frames. And then I think, you know, we have 6 base frames and 8 base frames, and 6 base frames are more flat, which would be more lifestyle frames like the Spiro, the Rincon, that kind of, you know, they can be used on the water, but they have a flatter base. So they're more lifestyle. And then our 8 base frames are some of our best sellers and kind of what started with the brand is, and they have more wrap on them. So they have more coverage on the side of your eyes, let less light in.
What do you think is the, just from a fishing perspective, I know we have salt and freshwater, but what do you think is the most popular frame you guys sell for like fly fishermen or just fishing in general?
Our number one selling frame right now is the Reefton.
How do you spell that?
R-E-E-F-T-O-N.
Okay.
And so we have, the Reefton's our best selling frame. This year, some of our really, really good sellers for fishing in general have been our Pro Series. So basically we took frames that we had that have been kind of in the lineup for a while and revamped them. So we have the Fantail Pro and the Blackfin Pro. And so we still have the regular Blackfin and the regular Fantail, but these new frames have 6 new features. They have adjustable nose pads, sweat channels, a hooding over the top of the eyes to block more light, metal keeper slots for retainers. They're just, yeah, they're great. And so those have been some of the top sellers this year as well. And those are both 8 base.
Okay. So. Perfect. And what about glass? When you talk about the glass itself, I mean, yeah. What about glass versus plastic? Are there any, is plastic, I mean, is still a decent, if you get a high quality, or is glass the way to go?
Yeah. So specifically for fishing, you know, either will work, and either, you know, both are great polarized options, but I think I specifically fish in glass, and some of the benefits of that are optical clarity is just as hair better. And then you have, and they're a more scratch resistant as well. So if you're getting salt water on them, or even if you're, you know, even if you're fishing freshwater and, you know, wiping stuff off with a towel in the boat, or like something that you might have, you know, some sediment on it or something, you know, it's a lot more scratch resistant.
Is it heavier?
Yeah, it's a tad heavier. So you can definitely notice a difference. And that's why the frame selection's pretty important when you're picking glass lenses too, because you want them to be, they're not, you know, much heavier, but you just want them to be comfortable. And so when you have, and then the poly is more impact resistant, and a little bit lighter.
Do you guys make a poly?
So the poly is basically the 580P. So it's the plastic.
Gotcha.
So it's the plastic versus glass. Yeah.
And on, from a price perspective, is the plastic typically cheaper than glass?
Typically about $50.
$50. And what about the lens color? If you're talking, you know, you got the blue, the green, you got the amber. I mean, what is, let's take it to, again, let's start with the most popular. What is for fishing? What is the most popular? And I know you have salt and freshwater, but what would you say there?
Sure. I would say our most popular lenses are amber based. And so, which would usually be the green mirror. So we have the green mirror, which is an amber base. We have amber, no mirror, as well. And then we have a copper silver mirror. But I would say the green mirrors for fishermen in general is probably
the green mirror. Does that, is that good for salt and freshwater?
Yeah, it's great for both. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's probably why, cause it has so many applications.
Okay. And I was just thinking, I've used a pair of amber lenses for years, and they're, like I said, my old glasses, they're really great. They're, I think they're even plastic. I can't remember the name of the brand. I think that they might've been, SunCloud.
Okay.
I'm
yeah.
Not sure if you, yeah. 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 Sure. SunCloud. I'm not even sure the history of SunCloud or whatever, but they were super light. They are a little scratched up. They got scratched up, but I loved them because they were so light, and they were just kind of like, I don't know, just easy, and they fit. They were a wrap, but it was amber, and I always liked amber. But you're saying, how does green mirror compare to, say, that amber lens?
Yeah. So it has a copper base. So it's close to the amber spectrum. So with that, you have the, copper/amber highlight. It accentuates contrast. right? So, and that's the best thing for fish spotting when you're sight fishing.
Oh, there you go.
Yep.
So that's it.
Yep.
Yep. So that's it. So now we're getting down to it. I mean, glasses, a good quality lens is basically, especially for salt where you're trying to find fish. But if you're in an area where maybe you're not spotting fish or it's not critical, maybe you don't need the super high quality lens necessarily.
Yeah. I mean, you know, something to be said for high quality lenses too is optical clarity for other things, I'm trying to think, like, not specifically sight fishing, but, you know, it's something to be said for a good pair of glasses for your eye protection as far as light coming in and, you know, different spectrums on that. And, you know, and there's a lot of great manufacturers out there, but there's something to be said, you know, versus even, you know, if you were to go with a different brand, it's better, like a high quality pair of glasses, whether it be plastic or glass, is, you know, infinitely better for your eye health over a, you know, say $20 pair you could find at Walmart or whatever, even though they're both polarized. So
that's the problem. That's probably my problem. I've been going with the cheaper glasses, and probably that's probably the reason I'm wearing glasses now for reading.
Maybe. I don't know.
That's it. All right. Well, let's think. So on the polarized, this is another interesting thing because obviously polarized is huge again, for water, being able to cut the glare. What, I'm curious, you know, when you have your glasses on, you're walking around town, you have that thing where, you know, if you're looking straight, you have polarized. And then if you turn your head sideways, the polarization kind of goes away. What, I'm not even sure the tech why that happens, but are there glasses that are polarized where it doesn't do that? Because it's kind of hard actually when you're looking at your phone, right? Because you have that glare.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, definitely. And that's the thing too, you think about with polarized glasses, and I've experienced this with multiple brands where, you know, if you're like trying to go outside and work on your laptop, you can't see the screen.
No.
and vice versa. Exactly. Yeah. And then some, you know, it's funny with some, like, it seems to be Toyota specifically, but the screens in the trucks are hard to see at certain angles with polarized glasses on. Yeah. And I don't know if it's just the way that, like, it's the way they're built with it. It's just like, maybe the screen's flatter than in some other vehicles. I don't know, but that's, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword. I think, ours do a really good job of, you know, you have pretty good with the wrap, and even 6 and 8 base, you have pretty good optical clarity throughout. You know, if you get into the edges, maybe, but it seems to be kind of the case with most polarization.
It is. Yeah. You can't get away from that. It's just going to make it harder to look if you can't really go outdoor and look at a screen that cleanly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. That gives us a take there. And just give us a feedback on, you know, the glasses cost wise. You know, obviously glasses, like you said, can range from $20 up to hundreds of dollars. What is the biggest thing? I mean, as far as is it the tech? Is it just the lens that makes these glasses more expensive, or speak a little bit to that?
Sure. Yeah. So I think for us, it's the whole technology package as far as, you know, build quality lenses, frames. The frames are, you know, well thought out and try and use the best materials possible. And so, you know, we're kind of in line with a lot of other premium sunglass manufacturers as far as price goes. You know, and from a perspective of poly versus glass, you know, that's kind of the poly is a little bit of our cheaper offering, which kind of is kind of an introduction into the brand, if you will. And then something that's cool too is we have actually just launched our Untangled 2.0 collection this past spring. And so our Untangled, which is they're made from recycled fishing nets, they are actually our cheapest glass offering, which is kind of cool. So they're $226 versus, you know, some of our other glass frames are, you know, $279.
Gotcha. So those are glass. So the Untangled series is that's the frame is made of recycled, like, ocean plastic?
Correct. Yep. Yeah. So recycled fishing nets. They're a company called Boreo. They have a program where they basically have, you know, a lot of people think that they're just derelict nets that are kind of floating in the ocean that are recovered. But what they've done is super cool is they have a program where fishermen in South America can basically turn in their old fishing nets instead of leaving them in the ocean and get kind of a kickback for that. And then they basically strip those down and then turn them into it's nylon pellets. And then the pellets can be melted down into injection molding.
Oh, wow. There you go.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay. So as we think of this, you know, we've gone over some general stuff on glass, and glasses aren't, you know, when you think about it, it's not like a super technical product. I mean, it's just glasses, but anything else we want to be thinking about if we're somebody's coming in here and they need a new pair of glasses, you know, what else, any other, you know, tips or resources, anything that you would recommend they dig into?
Sure. Yeah. So I, like we kind of touched on earlier, fit is kind of imperative. And if you're fishing specifically, I'd recommend an 8-base frame because it has more coverage. So it blocks that light out. You know, you think about, you have, you know, say Sims and whoever else, even our Costa hats, like you try and block out as much light as possible. So even the hats, you know, have the black brim underneath. And so it's effectively that for your eyes, like kind of keeping out as much light. And that's kind of enemy because it creates more glare. You know, it's a distraction. So fit 8-base, and then I would steer people. I think poly is great and our poly lenses are fantastic, but if it's fish specifically, I would steer towards glass just from a durability standpoint. And you know, and then it goes down to lens color. We have so many different lens colors, but if you know, I get asked a lot, you know, think about maybe people who work for Costa, professional captains and guides, you know, their tools, sunglasses are kind of a tool, for them to catch more fish and have more pleasant days on the water. So a lot of us have multiple pairs of sunglasses. So we're able to have different fits, different lens colors, all that. But if the question, like I said, that I get asked all the time is like, hey, you know, they're expensive. So if I'm only buying one pair, what color lens do I want? You know, and I would say, kind of like we touched on earlier, the green mirror, copper, silver mirror are both great for that. And kind of like they're good experience all around, whether you're on the water, driving your car, anything in it. And it creates a lot more contrast, but keeps a good amount of light out as well.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. And I know there's some stuff, some techie stuff we're leaving on the table, but maybe we'll leave it to folks if they want to connect to Costa. We can find somebody or a resource where they can learn more about.
Yeah, sure. No, I'd be happy to.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm happy to answer some of those questions as well. But yeah, we can definitely, you know, like I said, there's so much information and technology that goes into it that we could have a whole other hour talk just on that. You know, so.
No, totally. And I'm thinking, you know, I had a pair of glasses, you know, that, you know, I tried them on and I thought they were good. And then after wearing them for like a month, I realized I was getting like a red mark on my nose because the glasses, mm-hmm. I just think didn't fit. So I guess one tip might be to, you probably don't want to be buying these things online. You probably want to go in and get a fit. What would you recommend there? Because you don't know all.
Yeah.
Even though, yeah.
No, great question. I would 1000% recommend visiting a local retailer. We have kind of minimized advertised pricing. So, all you know, if you buy it on the site versus a retailer, you're going to pay the same. So there's really no benefit to, you know, our e-com team is probably going to get a hold of this and be like, what are you talking about, Evan? Yeah. But no, I mean, our dealers are bread and butter and those people are trained and they can help you. And fit is so subjective too, right? We do the best we can on our site with fit wise, you know, it gives you measurements. It has a lens fit and frame width fit. Like, you know, it's from everything from small to large. So it kind of gets you close. But if you have an opportunity and there's some areas that the nearest dealer is, you know, 50 miles. So it might be a pain. But yeah, I mean, it's an investment, right? So if you're spending that much money on a pair of sunglasses, I highly recommend try them on.
Yeah, try them on first.
In person, yeah. Yeah. And something that's cool with like our Pro Series that I mentioned earlier and that's translated some of our other frames. We have the Ferg frame as well. They have adjustable nose pads on them. So you can kind of customize the fit to a certain degree, which is kind of nice. So, you know, having those... having the ability and you know, what made me think of that was you saying the red mark on your nose. And so there's a handful of frames that we have that you can adjust the nose pad on to, you know, customize that fit for you. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. And I was just looking at a few other tips. I think this is from like an REI article on sunglasses, but it says, you know, a few little bullet tips. Frame should fit snugly on your nose and ears, but not pinch. I mean, some obvious stuff. The weight should be evenly distributed to your ear and nose. Frame should be light enough to avoid friction. You know, another obvious one. Your eyelashes should not contact the frame. You know, that's pretty. And then there's a couple other little ones here as far as, and they note here adjusting the nose piece as well. So it, and so, yeah, there's a ton of stuff. I'll link out to that article and some other info there.
Yeah, and there's some good tips on that too, because, you know, fit creates, like I said, you want to block out as much light as possible. But also, if the fit is too tight, you know, we've introduced a lot of features, venting and all kinds of stuff, and especially with the adjustable nose pad to create less fog situations. But, you know, sometimes if the wrap's too tight and they're not, you know, and you might think they fit, but you know, if a retailer has a trained salesperson on the floor, they might be able to help you with that as well. With, okay, those are a little too tight, and you can, you know, and create some fog in there. But a lot of our new frames have things to prevent that in certain vents. And, you know, with the adjustable nose pads, you can bend them enough to set, like, have the frame sit a little bit off of your face, so they're, you know, so that doesn't happen.
And now let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. In today's world of mass-produced products, Stonefly Nets has reclaimed the tradition of handcrafted care with their custom wood landing nets. Stonefly starts the design process by selecting wood for the handle based on a number of key factors, including grain, pattern, and depth, but they don't stop there. This piece of art is accentuated by strips of hardwood that complement and accentuate the handcrafted handle. To be honest, I have never been a huge net guy, mainly because I didn't feel like my old collapsible net was easiest to use and was not easy on the eye, if you know what I mean. The Stonefly net not only looks beautiful, but has high-quality netting that is easy on the fish and will last for years to come. Stonefly's goal is to create a unique custom classic wood net that's second to none and can be customized for a little extra touch. When Ethan designs a custom net, it's his hope that others will create amazing lasting memories for years to come. Please head over to wetflyswing.com/stonefly to get your custom net now. That's wetflyswing.com/stonefly, STONEFLY, to get started right now. Okay, let's get back to the show. So you've worked for two different companies. You worked for Yeti, and now you're with Costa. It seems like Costa is a much bigger, older company. Yeti is a younger company. Talk about the difference between the two companies. I'm sure there's some, and I'm thinking more focus on maybe somebody listening that wants to understand a little bit about, you know, maybe they have a brand, they want to hear some successes, what they could do. Think about it. What is the big difference?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, actually, funny enough, so Costa is an older company, but revenue-wise, like Yeti has just been an absolute rocket ship. So they've kind of eclipsed them. From a Costa standpoint, you know, Luxottica, the greater organization, is bigger, but gotcha. The brand revenue-wise is less than Yeti. But yeah, so the differences between the brands, there's a lot of similarities. It's kind of, you know, we focus a lot on community marketing, so grassroots level stuff, sponsoring tournaments, you know, making sure we're at events, kind of those one-on-one interactions with captains and guides and other organizations. And so, you know, in both companies, we focus at Yeti and at Costa, focus a lot on conservation. So, you know, if we don't preserve the resource, then we don't have our consumer is that person. And so if we don't preserve the resource, there's no reason to go outside anymore. And so, you know, that might be taken a little far, but you know, you got to kind of like stay true to your roots. And I think both companies have done a great job of that. Like you can welcome new people into the brand and talk to new audiences, but you can't forget where you came from and who were your original core consumers and kind of who helped you get to where you're going. So, you know, that's been a big play. The community piece is huge. And that's kind of what the team that I worked on in both companies is community marketing. With Yeti, there's such a broad reach to, you know, with fishing, they speak to fishermen, hunters, the ranch and rodeo crowd. They're big into barbecue, outdoor. So you have rock climbers and river raft guides and all kinds of people, snowboarders, skiers. I think the biggest difference for us is Costa is pretty much just a fishing company. So our one community that we really, really focus on and drive home is the fishermen and anglers. Yeah.
No kidding. So it's all a fishing. That's the one thing I was curious about. So
yeah,
I didn't realize it was such a fishing focus. So you don't have, I mean, even though they're sunglasses, you're really not, your target market is not just the general public as much.
Yeah. And you know, we'd love the general public to latch onto our brand, but yeah, the people we speak to are pretty much anglers, and you know, we do, and I would say anglers and watermen, right? So you have our spear fishermen and women, kind of our surfing crowd. And then, you know, we're talking about how to expand that market in an authentic way. And how do we go about that aspirationally and speak to new people? You know, like I said, we would love to sell to anybody that finds our brand interesting and our product great. And so something that's kind of introduced our product more to the masses is Luxottica owns Sunglass Hut. And so all of our products are in Sunglass Hut now, which, you know, so when you're in our, you know, everyday consumer and you go into Sunglass Hut in a mall or something and are trying on glasses, you know, our product is there to compare to all the other brands they carry as well, which is kind of cool. So
there you go. That's awesome. I was interested. You mentioned the community marketing, and that's something I think sounds like something that's been pretty helpful for you as a brand. Now, describe that. What is community? Is it more than just going to events? What does community marketing exactly mean?
Yeah. So community marketing is kind of all encompassing of the community. So there's so many touch points, like I said, with events, conservation efforts, even the media piece. There's, you know, even doing things like this, like, you know, podcasts, talking to folks in the industry. So it's marketing specifically to the people who kind of buy your product and will help grow your brand by word of mouth. So if from the fishing community, we want to support everything they do from A to Z and initiatives that are important to them, whether it be, you know, sponsoring a sailfish tournament or, you know, and then actually showing up at that sailfish tournament instead of just stroking a check, but, you know, being there, shaking hands, helping people with warranty issues, right. You know, sponsoring a bar tab or something for everybody to wind down at the end of the day, you know, so it's kind of, there's a lot of facets to it. And,
it's basically about engaging.
Engaging. Exactly. Yeah. It's the one-on-one interaction, right? So we do these like guide rendezvous, and so, you know, we'll sponsor a couple of days for guides to come kind of kick back and relax and, you know, sponsor helpful things for them, whether it be, you know, having an accountant come speak on how to do your taxes a little better as a fishing guide and, you know, kind of bringing up topics and things that are important to them about licensing and all this. So it's just kind of like, yeah, it's that grassroots marketing one-on-one interaction.
So it's like you're it's kind of like a guerrilla marketing, but not really. You know, it's more like where you're actually sponsoring, you're paying for some,
yeah,
some, instead of paying for a Google ad you're paying for sponsoring a local event, which is awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
It's essentially what we do at the podcast. You know, when we bring new sponsors on the podcast, a big part of what we do is saying, you know, we say, hey, let's just not think about this as an ad thing. Let's think about a cool activation we can create that really engages our listener with the brand, right? So if we were working with you guys,
yeah, that's exactly,
you know, right. What I mean? That's the whole thing, because people that are listening right now, you know, the worst thing to be is to be boring, right? And just be like some run of the mill. But if you can create something that actually is engaging and helpful to somebody, then they're much more likely to check it out. So that sounds like that's kind of where you guys are at.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so you spend a lot of time in that. And you know, that's a thing as we grow, you know, we're so heavy in the Southeast and gained a lot of traction in the Northeast now and out on the West Coast. And we need to work on the Great Lakes area. And so you sponsor and I wouldn't even say sponsor, right? You support things that are important to the people in that region, you know, kind of the go-to events and the, you know, just even just the guides and create programs, you can support conservation efforts in their area to make sure that they can keep fishing and all that. So it's kind of, and it, you know, it's a lot of effort. We have a decent sized team for that. And we, you know, we're hiring some folks now too. And as we grow, you know, it's important to be present in those areas. So we have a gentleman named Bob Hoos, who is our California community leader, and he's done such a great job out there and making sure we show up at every event and supporting people and, you know, kind of carrying on the brand message there. And so the more people see you, the more they associate your brand with the fishing environment. So that when, you know, somebody goes to a surf shop and they can buy a pair of Smiths, a pair of Costas, you know, Von Zip or Electric, whatever, they're like, oh, like Costa's shown up. I've seen the van. Like I've, you know, met Bob. Like I'm going to, you know, all these glasses cost about the same, so I'm going to go with them, you know? So
that's it. Yeah. It's just getting out there. No, it makes total sense. So, well, and I think today, Evan, we're not going to have time to dig into fully to the brand stuff. And we actually have another podcast that I do, which is more focused on online marketing for outdoor brands. So I think that might be a good chance. Maybe we could talk down the line if there was any interest. Yeah. And digging in more, because I think this topic, like we said, there's a bunch of companies and brands that love hearing it when we dig. And I know there's some people listening that don't have companies. And I think we hopefully served them with the initial part of this, but I'm just curious if you give us, as we kind of think about starting to take this out, just one tip for that brand. So somebody's listening from a marketing perspective, we've talked a little bit about, but what would you tell them if they got a newer brand, maybe they've got maybe it's a new glass company or a rod company or something like that. Any tip you would give them to help them kind of move the needle a little bit?
Oh man. yeah.
that's definitely, I love to put you on the spot there, Evan. So thank you.
No, I love it. Yeah, I'm trying to think. You know, I think you can't forget the brand vision. Like you can't, I'm trying to think, like stay true to your roots no matter what. And like I said earlier, like you can always, so whatever your initial goal for the brand was, stick to that. And you can welcome people into the sport or the brand, you know, but don't forget what kind of that initial spark and fire was. Just don't lose your way. That's like amazing. There's so many things that get thrown at us all the time. Right. And you gotta, if you kind of focus on what you're good at and then the rest will kind of fall into place. So, you know, if you're a product company, you know, there's a lot of companies out there that are marketing companies that sell a product and they do an incredible job because they market really well. And there's a lot of product companies that, you know, like if you focus on building a really good product and then market it pretty well, like that'll, you know, you'll gain a lot of interest.
Word of mouth is probably right. Even though all the stuff we talk about, if you have a sweet product, even without marketing, you hear about these things all the time, right? Brands that don't do much marketing, also they just kick off but when you do well in the marketing and you have a good product, that's it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, from a product standpoint, build the best you can, have a good warranty, customer service is key. I mean, you kind of see how, I don't know if you know much about Chewy, .com, but like, gosh, Chewy.com is like it's such a cool customer service, story. Yeah.
Don't tell me what this is. I have no idea. Yeah. So I'm guessing this isn't a dog treat thing.
No, it is. So,
oh, it is. Oh, nice. Yeah, so they did good on their marketing, I guess.
They sell, you know, a lot of companies do as well, but they sell dog food and dog medicines and cat food, you know, all animal stuff. But they just like have done, like you get a handwritten card, like they send flowers if your pet passes away. Like you can get a hold of them within 2 minutes on a phone or chat or anything. Like it's such a cool company. You know, it's like, those things make you want to buy the product because of that
service.
You know, so it's service. Exactly. And it's just you got to have something that differentiates your brand from all the others. And whether it be, you know, there's 10 roto-molded cooler companies out there. Why is Yeti better? There's Costa sunglasses. There's a ton of sunglasses out there, but why, you know, why would you buy that? And it's because these brands care about what you believe in. They care about, kind of what you do as kind of a pursuit, and they support that, you know? And so, and that's kind of the differentiator. You got to have that.
What is that? I'm just curious, put you on the spot again, the vision of Costa, you know, or the mission or whatever. I mean, when you think of it, it sounds like, you know, my guess is you're obviously focused on the fly fishing industry. So it's all about, you know, like you said, conservation and providing the best products, but is there a broader vision there?
Costa is a brand. So I think it's, you know, our tagline, see what's out there, right? So we create, the way I like to kind of equate it to is it enhances your outdoor experience through comfort, vision, you know, and your connection to the outside world is by what you see through your eyes, right? And so that's your experience. And so if we can elevate that and, you know, I like to say, it still blows me away to this day. And I'm not just saying this because I would tell you this if I didn't work for Costa, the experience with them, the clarity and quality of the lenses is just so far above and beyond. Like you think, like I'm thinking about when I first had my experience with them growing up when I was a teenager, you know, and had a pair. And then now, like, even to this day, like I'll put them on and go outside and like say it's like fall right now, right? So there's a lot of like vibrant colors and stuff, and it just enhances everything. It's like polarization plus, right? Like it's like HD vision for, you know.
What made you, if you go back to that seven or whatever your teenage years, what made you, because I'm sure they weren't cheap then. Why did you buy Costa then?
Yeah. Exactly. You know, it's funny. I had my my girlfriend at the time bought me a pair for Christmas. And I was like, what, like, how many hours did you have to work to get these, you know, yeah. Like, you know, these are all like, you know, we're like servers or waiters totally. Or whatever, you know, it's so funny. Wow. And you're like, but,
that'd be a better question for her.
Yeah, exactly. That was initial. It was just kind of like where I grew up specifically. I mean, everybody had them and it was kind of like, if what's amazing about these lifestyle brands is that you get kind of people to it's the word of mouth thing and the it's the brand kind of transcends the product as far as, you know, you see people. It was like if you were a fisherman, like you could identify a fisherman by what glasses he wore, right? Like or she. And so you see somebody wearing Costas and it's like an instant connection and you're like, oh, that person definitely fishes. And
gotcha.
So it was just kind of like what you did. I mean, we always joke about it. It's like you have people paying, you know, $10 for a decal to put on their truck to market for you. You know, they pay they're like paying us to like fly the flag, you know? So it's crazy. And so that's kind of the thing. It was like a lifestyle play, right? Like that was, you know, we knew they had it was arguably the best product, you know, especially with, like as a teenager, like, you know, everybody's wearing Costas, all the captain's guides, anybody you see in my hometown. And so you're like, okay, well, yeah, it becomes a point where you like go shop for glasses and you don't even consider anything else other than Costa. And I'm sure in some other areas that brand, it's another brand for those areas, you know, and that's fine, but it's just kind of the way it goes, right? And like a cooler, right? You're like, well, you know, I'm not even really shop around. I know I want a Yeti. Like that's.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I think the lifestyle, I think you're nailing it on the head with the, you know, the lifestyle brand or whatever. So if you think about some other company that say is a, let's go back to, I mean, the rod is more specific, but other products, I mean, can any company be a lifestyle type company or is this specific to more general type categories?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it can and it can. It depends on the reach too, right? So you have like, I think G Loomis has done a really good job of kind of making that connection with the consumer and kind of like telling the story through pros and ambassadors' eyes, which is neat. So it kind of like, you have a little bit more of a connection there, but at the end of the day, I mean, that's the thing, right? So if you see a Yeti sticker or a Costa C, or I'm trying to think of other brands out there, like a sticker on a truck or boat, you kind of like know what it is. And then like, it depends on the brand, I guess, depth and breadth, if you will. Cause you think about like Loomis, right? Like people don't know what G Loomis is unless you fish probably and see that decal. They're like, what's that? You know? And so, and that can go through multiple products. Like, you know, it's kind of, I don't know. That's a tricky one. I think you can build that, but I think some products lend themselves more to it than others.
And Yeti has become, I mean, obviously Yeti has blown up part of it, like you said, because of the storytelling and their marketing and stuff, but they are, right? Would you say they're kind of a lifestyle brand?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the key to any of that is you take a everyday product that's not sexy and you build a following around it. Can you imagine, like, you think about, I don't know, current day or 5 years ago, like, would you imagine somebody like slapping a Coleman sticker or a Igloo sticker on their truck and that being a cool thing to have, you know? And that's the same thing you think about Costa or whatever. Like, I don't know. You see that Costa C and it kind of like resonates. And it's a product that you use day in and day out, right? So you like, most people don't leave home without their sunglasses. So it's always front of mind. And then you can identify other people by way of it. So you're like, hey, that person probably likes the water because they're wearing those glasses or probably fishes or whatever it may be.
Exactly.
So, yep. yeah, you just kind of have to build that following. And
yeah, no, it's interesting because I've seen it, and we've had a few, you know, we obviously 90% of our podcasts are fly fishing focused, but we've done a few that have been kind of, you know, like this. This is not specifically fly fishing, but we had another cooler company, Canyon Coolers, on, who does a rotomolded. And it's interesting because their market, really, their target market is that rafting community, you know what I mean? Like, they're really focused on building products for that. And they're different than Yeti. I think Yeti is a little bit different, similar thing. But it was interesting hearing that conversation because it seems like, you know, Yeti's kind of dominating up this level, and then you got everybody else below. But it seems like there's still room to find your target market and double down on them and serve them. And then you could always grow, right, as you get bigger.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. I think you focus on, you don't want to take such a wide approach initially. So you got to dig in and make, you know, get planted and have some really deep roots in your whatever core community you're going after, and then kind of let it spread and then welcome other people into the brand. And so, you know, and that word of mouth, you know, kind of piece spreads like wildfire. So that's huge for sure. And especially if they had a good experience with the brand, whether it be the product, customer service, you know, people always say, and that's the thing, right? You have like 8 bad reviews for every 1 good one, because people who have a good experience don't really they recommend it to their friends, but they don't go online and write reviews. Like I was joking with a buddy the other day about this. I'm like, I only buy stuff off of Amazon if I read the reviews, but I like rarely leave reviews, you know, even if it's great.
Well, here's the tip for you and everybody out there on reviews, like Amazon, wherever. But, you know, go in there, don't read the 5-star review, don't read the 1-star reviews, read the 3-star reviews.
Yeah, exactly.
Those are the ones where people actually, you know, they have more of an opinion and they write. It's more, So anyways, but I mean, the reviews, it's like this podcast is a good example. You know, I mean, sometimes you have to ask for the review, and we do sometimes, like right now, you know, so go press pause and go leave a review if you're loving the show, because, you know, those are the people.
Yeah, exactly.
Most people do love your product, and,
right,
and, you know, but most of those people don't leave a review, and it helps. It helps. But yep, okay,
exactly.
Cool. Well, we've been definitely nerding out on this marketing stuff, so I'll have to hold this till maybe we can get you on another show if that works out. But I'm just curious on the captains for clean water. We noted this at the start. Steve Davis noted this when we did our Everglades piece. Just give us a little snippet of what that's about and what your event was like you guys attended.
Yeah, so Captains for Clean Water, they were, gosh, I'm trying to think, founded in 2015 or 16, I want to say. And they were kind of, you know, started by Chris Whitman and Daniel Andrews, who were fishing guides at the time, who noticed a lot of water quality issues on the west coast of Florida and, you know, down into the Everglades. And so, you know, there's a lot of organizations who weren't doing much about it. And so they're like, well, let's step in and do this. And you know, it seems crazy to try and take on Florida legislature and the government and all this stuff to try and kind of further their agenda. But they were able to grow a huge following and kind of pull it off. And it's, I mean, they've gotten so much passed through. And so they're definitely on the right trajectory. I think they have 15 or 20 employees now, which is incredible. And so this gala, it was called the Restore Gala this past Friday, and they do it annually. But it's been had to be postponed because of the COVID the last couple of years. But so it's their biggest like fundraising effort. And so, which is, it's super cool. And they have, you know, corporate sponsors, and Coast is one of them. But we have, you know, people buy tickets to this event. It's a sit down dinner, kind of cocktail hour, a whole evening. And basically people, the coolest thing about this is it kind of is a snowball effect. So they start off after dinner, you know, they talk about kind of some of their initiatives and people donating. And so, you know, I could get up and say, hey, you know, I grew up in Florida. I'd love to see things change. You know, I don't have a lot of money, but I'd like to donate $250 or something. And then you'll have somebody who kind of like that resonates with them. And they're like, man, love to get a table donation. I mean, there's so many. The first one they did, I think they raised like over 300 grand that night. And so, which is amazing. So it's like, and a lot of people go there, maybe not even expecting to donate. And then somebody says really resonates with them, and it kind of tugs on their heartstrings, and they say, you know, I'm going to do this. And there was a lot of big donations this year, which is awesome. And it's just kind of going around. It's kind of a open discussion about, you know, people's experience and why they want to want to fix the water quality issues, fix the fishery, you know, stuff that kind of is near and dear to them. And so it's really cool. It kind of spreads like wildfire and people who go there.
Steve Davis, like I noted, I asked him, I think in somewhere along the line, what is the number one thing? Cause I think that movement's been going on for like 20 years. And I asked him, you know, what's stopping you guys right now from meeting, going all the way and just getting this, you know, the thing. And he said the number one thing is funding. You know, it's not the legislation, is like it's bipartisan support and stuff. So it's really funding. So the more people that can, you mm-hmm. guys, so the more we get that going, the better off. So just a heads up for anybody who wants to connect with it. Captains for Clean Water, right?
Yep, that's right. Yeah, it's kind of an organization, yeah, based out of Florida. And so there's a lot of takeaways, you know, I hear questions too, like, well, why should I, you know, why would I be interested in that if I don't live in Florida? Because it kind of affects all water quality, and it also can be replicated in other states. So it's kind of like a success story for how things might be done elsewhere. So it's kind of, you know, definitely intriguing in that regard.
That's it. No, that's exactly it. And I think that was another point that was made in that podcast, is that, yeah, I mean, you know, you definitely can support that, but also support your local, whatever your local movement is, right? There's probably some conservation effort going on in your state or your, you know, your area. So that's a good way to get started on too, and just learn about what's going on locally.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. And that's the thing. Yeah. And there's so many organizations that you can go help and dig in, and a lot of them make themselves known, but I'm sure there's, you know, similar organizations elsewhere in your local home state and home waters that can, you know, make a difference.
So just take us out here, Evan, for Costa. You know, if we always like to ask you in the next year or whatever, anything new coming, any new glasses or movement, anything you guys have going you want to highlight here?
Man, so, you know, it's funny. Sometimes we got to keep things under wraps for a little bit, but we're actually going down to Baja next week to shoot a lot of stuff for our spring products.
Oh, perfect.
So we'll be having some, a handful of new frames coming out. And then also a good bit of new apparel as well. So we're excited about that.
There you go. All right, Evan, we'll all send everybody out costadelmar.com, or they can connect with you, I guess, on Instagram. What do you got? Evan Russ, right?
Yep, that's right.
All right, perfect. All right, Evan, hey, thanks for shedding a little bit of light on glasses and choosing a pair and the Costa story. I think if we have more questions, we can probably just head over to the website, dig into that, and pick your brain a little more
Sure. Yeah. And feel free to reach out on Instagram, or, you know, if you guys have any questions, happy to answer. But man, Dave, I can't thank you enough for having me on today. I had a good time, and it's fun to talk a little bit about the brand and marketing in general. And hopefully one of these days we'll get to fish together.
Yeah. It sounds great. All right, Evan, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, cool. Sounds good. Thanks.
So there you go. If you want to find all the show notes, all the links, everything else we covered today, head over to wetflyswing.com/272. 272. Reminder, please click that subscribe button in your app of choice if you get a chance today. That'll get you reminded next time our episode goes live, and that next episode is a good one. Tuesday, we've got a super massive episode with Tim Landwehr on smallmouth bass fishing. Tim not only wrote one of the most impactful recent books on the species, but also produced what may be the easiest and most enjoyable episode of the year for me. This one is super smooth and super fun. Tim brings so many stories. It was just awesome, awesome episode. So click that subscribe button and you will get notified when that episode goes live. I'd love to hear from you, to hear if you had a chance to listen to it. Just reach out to me, Dave at Wetfly Swing, and give me a heads up. I'd love to hear if you are interested in smallmouth or what other species you'd like me to dig into here. That's it. That's all I have for you today. Thanks for checking out the show and for sticking with us till the very end. I will see you on the flip side.
Thanks for listening to the Wetfly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.